Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
There was violence today at Nigeria's parliament. Ugandan lawmakers work on another homosexuality bill. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Chaos erupted at Nigeria's National Assembly today when security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from entering the complex. When the Speaker earlier had changed his allegiance to the opposition party, he had lost his security clearance, which triggered today's violence. According to a report by AFP, Parliament was about to vote on an important security issue concerning a request by the government to extend emergency rule in a northeast region hit hard by the militant group Boko Haram. The opposition opposed the move, and AFP says lawmakers in the lower chamber voted no. The Associated Press reports the Senate president has suspended proceedings until Tuesday. Health authorities in Mali say they are monitoring 338 people linked with the country's six fatal Ebola cases, with most of them under daily surveillance. In a news release, the World Health Organization today said all 118 people who had direct contact with Ebola victims have completed their 21-day incubation period without developing symptoms. The AFP News Service reports Ugandan lawmakers are working on a new bill on homosexuality that they hope will garner crossbench support. They hope to have a draft ready for consideration by the end of the year. Last year, Parliament passed a bill that would have imposed life sentences on people convicted of illegal homosexual activity. But the bill was rejected on a technicality by the Constitutional Court. The new bill is believed to focus on outlawing the promotion of homosexuality. This is VOA News. Also from AFP, in Nigeria, lawyers for the popular preacher T.B. Joshua say they are challenging a coroner's order that would force Joshua to give testimony about the collapse of a church-owned building. The building collapsed September 12th, killing 116 people. Joshua has so far refused to appear at inquests into the tragedy. South Africa's central bank says the nation's economy will grow by only 1.4% this year. According to the AFP, Bank Governor Lesetja Ganyago also downgraded predictions for 2015 and 2016. The bank will leave interest rates on hold. According to a report by the Associated Press, Egypt has arrested a leading member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Muhammad Ali Bishr earlier had played a key role in talks between the group and the government. Egypt has waged a crackdown on the now illegal Brotherhood since the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi in 2013. The Associated Press reports that the wife of Zambia's late president will seek to succeed her husband. Christine Kasebasata says she will seek to run as the ruling Patriotic Front Party candidate for president. She is the third member of her family to join the presidential race. Mulinga Sata, the son of the late president and mayor of the capital, Lusaka, announced his candidacy, as did the late president's nephew, Miles Sampa, who is the deputy commerce minister. Unhappy about a UN committee's condemnation of its human rights record, North Korea is threatening to conduct a nuclear test. In a statement today, North Korea's foreign ministry said it will be, quoting now, unable to refrain any longer from conducting a fourth nuclear test due to a UN committee's resolution on the North's human rights situation. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says leading nations are united in their search for an agreement on Iran's nuclear program. As a deadline nears for a decision on a comprehensive accord, Kerry said officials want an agreement, but not just any agreement. He spoke after meeting today in Paris with the foreign ministers of France and Saudi Arabia. The secretary travels to Vienna today to join high-level talks with Iran and the group of nations leading the effort. Yukiya Amano, who is International Atomic Energy Agency Director General, spoke today to reporters.
IAEA can clarify the issues with cooperation from Iran within a reasonable time frame. We are ready to accelerate the process. I would like that Iran come up with concrete action to accelerate the process.
And in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yeheyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
A United Nations commission is looking into allegations of widespread and systematic violations by Eritrean authorities against the country's citizens. The three-member commission will start collecting first-hand information from victims and other witnesses in Switzerland and Italy next week.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up. Also in the news... Chaos erupted at Nigeria's National Assembly today as security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from entering the complex. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Ghana, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, police in Nigeria fired tear gas in an effort to prevent a top opposition lawmaker from entering parliament today. Members of parliament had convened in the capital, Abuja, to debate President Goodluck Jonathan's request to extend the state of emergency in the country's northeast as part of a fight against Boko Haram militants. Chris Stein reports from the capital.
The standoff began when Speaker of the House Aminu Tambuwal approached a gate leading into the National Assembly building. Imam, a spokesman for Tambuwal, said police blocked the speaker from entering the complex without giving a reason other than they were following orders. Tambuwal recently defected from the ruling People's Democratic Party to the All Progressives Congress opposition party.
The members who were with the speaker became agitated and some of them got angry and forced their way into the assembly complex. There and then the police now brought in reinforcement and locked the door again after the speaker had passed. So some of them had to climb over the fence. As soon as they had access into the premises, the police now used tear gas to disperse the members.
Police spokesman Emmanuel Ajukwu said the lawmakers and their entourage were unruly and police acted to restore order. He says seven people were arrested.
They broke the cordon put by the police because we had intelligence that there was trouble today, so we had to cordon the area to avoid a breakdown of law and order.
Lawmakers from Nigeria's Senate and House of Representatives were expected to vote today on whether to act on President Goodluck Jonathan's request to extend a state of emergency in three northeastern states. Lawmakers first approved emergency rule last year in response to the spreading Boko Haram insurgency, which has left thousands of people dead. Imam says the police's refusal to allow Tambuwal to enter came as a surprise.
You requested for the extension. He came to honor that, to do his job, and possibly sit down and look into the request. And yet you are asking armed men, armed police, and state security personnel to stop him from having access to the house. So it's really baffling, honestly. It's something we cannot put together.
Imam says the speaker eventually made it into the National Assembly. Tambuwal then met with senators and held a closed-door session with fellow members of the House, who decided that the president could use his mandate to continue the fight against Boko Haram in the north until lawmakers decide on the emergency rule extension. The House then adjourned to December 3rd. The Senate, meanwhile, adjourned till next Tuesday. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
A United Nations commission is looking into allegations of widespread and systematic violations by Eritrean authorities against the country's citizens. The three-member commission will start collecting first-hand information from victims and other witnesses in Switzerland and Italy next week. Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 6,000 Eritreans have fled to Ethiopia over the past month for fear of being recruited into the National Army. The agency recently said the number of Eritreans seeking asylum in Europe has tripled this year. The chairman of the commission, Mike Smith, says those numbers are a sign something is seriously wrong.
That, of course, is a symptom of what we're trying to look at. These people are leaving their country for a reason, and people don't put themselves at risk and go through the sorts of traumas which a lot of these people are doing. and to the risk of being exploited by people traffickers and so on, and travelling in unsafe boats across the Mediterranean without having some sort of a reason behind it.
One of the commission members is the UN Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in Eritrea, Sheila Keita Root. The Mauritian lawyer and human rights advocate has presented two reports to the UN Human Rights Council condemning gross violations in Eritrea. Nevertheless, she and the other two members, independent experts from Australia and Ghana, say they will approach their job in an independent and impartial way. The commission has sent a letter to the Eritrean government and has met with representatives at the UN mission in Geneva, requesting permission to enter the country to carry out its investigation. Smith tells VOA the group has not yet received a response to its request. He says it would be a good sign were the government to grant permission.
If they were to agree for us to come in, it would indicate, importantly, that they were prepared to address some of these problems, and I think that would be a very positive thing. And were we to get in there, we would be talking about the sorts of steps that would need to be taken to rectify any human rights problems that we identify.
Smith says the commission has not yet firmed up all the places where it will go to gather information. He adds the commission would like to go where there are substantial numbers of Eritrean asylum seekers. The UN Human Rights Council established the Commission of Inquiry in Eritrea in June to investigate a variety of alleged violations. These include extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary arrests, torture, restrictions to civil liberties, human trafficking, discrimination against women, and sexual and gender-based violence. The commission will report orally on its findings to the council in March. A final report will be presented in June. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Egyptian authorities arrested a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, Muhammad Ali Bashir. Cairo has linked him to calls by the hardline Salafi Front for anti-government demonstration later this month. Ali Bashir was taken from his Nile Delta home early this morning by security police. He was a major figure in negotiations between the government and the Muslim Brotherhood, which has since been banned in the country. This morning in Cairo, four passengers at the Ramses train station were injured when an exploding stun grenade caused a stampede of passengers. Four policemen were also injured when a bomb exploded outside Helwan University in southern Cairo. Violence escalated when the government began a crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood since the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi a year ago. You are listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Thirteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top story. Chaos erupted in Nigeria's National Assembly today as security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from entering the complex. A United Nations commission is looking into allegations of widespread and systematic violations by Eritrean authorities against the country's citizens. And WHO says Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea have improved their record of safe and dignified burial of those who die of the viral disease. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The World Health Organization says faster blood tests for those showing symptoms of the often fatal Ebola virus now offer results within 24 hours. Labs used to return results within days, too late for many Ebola patients. WHO also said the three West African countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, have improved their record of safe and dignified burial of those who die of the viral disease. The UN agency reported 4,800 victims of more than 5,000 have been given a safe and dignified burial. The international response is also improving. More than 1,000 beds are now available in 18 centers that treat Ebola victims and isolate them from the healthy population. All three factors of the war against Ebola offer hope of containing the spread of the virus by isolating the living and the dead who carry the virus. The latest figures for Ebola are more than 15,000 infections and 5,420 deaths. Most occurred in the three countries. In neighboring Mali, there have been 6 infections and 5 deaths in the last few weeks. Mali's first victim was a 2-year-old girl who arrived from Guinea and died October 24th. Those who had contact with her have been monitored and declared virus-free after 3 weeks. The 4 recent deaths that occurred in the capital Bamako are not tied to any contact with the first victim. Meanwhile, the number of children orphaned by the virus has skyrocketed to 7,000 in recent months. The virus that has killed parents in the three countries is also preventing relatives and families from other countries from adopting the orphans. It's not fear of contagion because the virus can be detected against fear more. The fear is more the trauma of change for children suffering in any emergency crisis. The number of Liberian orphans adopted by U.S. families dropped from 353 in 2009 to 12 last year. But the U.N. Children's Fund, the U.S. State Department, and some adoption agencies are telling relatives and all others to wait. Knowing where the Ebola hotspots are in a country is crucial to getting an outbreak quickly under control. Many have criticized the initial slow response to the West Africa outbreak, saying it's a big reason the virus quickly spread. Now, a German research center is developing a project to monitor Ebola and other outbreaks in real time. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
Professor Gerard Hauser says the new project, called EboCon, uses real-time monitoring to better manage an outbreak.
At the moment, we don't have treatments available and we don't have vaccines available. And even if we did, we would still need rapid follow-up of every new case that is occurring in order to guide this new patient to proper isolation and treatment.
Even more important, he says, is finding all those who came in contact with the patient, a process called contact tracing.
Capture every contact person and to follow up this contact person for 21 days and to see that they don't develop fever. If you have a number of cases, can be very, very complex very rapidly and will rapidly overwhelm the staff in the field. So for that reason, we are trying to build a management tool that will facilitate this task.
Kauser is head of the Department of Epidemiology at the Helmholtz Center for Infection Research and EboCon project leader for the German Center for Infection Research.
This is an information technology tool that we are developing together with colleagues from Nigeria that will take care of all those management aspects.
The EboCon project calls for setting up a command center, so to speak, in the capital of affected countries. Then health workers would use cell phones to relay in real time information on suspected cases around the country.
From the first entry of a rumor entering the public health service, they will send someone to verify the case. And when this case is verified, there will be diagnostic initiated. When the diagnostic is confirmed, there will be contact persons followed up for 21 days. If they develop fever, they will then again be treated as suspect people. And so on. It gets very complicated very fast. We need a management tool that takes care of that.
The health workers would be contacted by cell phone with instructions on how to handle their situation.
The emergency operations center in the center of the city will have a full overview of what's happening and can also redirect the resources accordingly. At the moment, we are working in Nigeria on this. for the simple reason that they have successfully gone through the experience in containing the outbreak. And this is very valuable experience. And should it become successful there, it will, of course, be applicable generally to any other country.
The Nigerian Ebocon project is taking place in Lagos and Port Harcourt. Qualified personnel are being borrowed from other groups to help test the system. Some 500 cell phones will be distributed. The German Ministry of Education and Research is providing $3 million to fund the project. In all, 10 Ebocon projects are on the drawing board for the next 14 months. Besides Ebola, they'll manage the latest information on vaccine research and analysis of the infection process. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The American doctor who became the first known Ebola patient on U.S. soil has expressed concern about the imposition of mandatory quarantines on relief workers returning from West Africa. Dr. Kent Brantley says quarantines such as those enacted in New York and New Jersey could discourage volunteers from traveling to Ebola-stricken countries. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has the story.
Dr. Kent Brantley says the way volunteers returning to the United States are treated will have a direct impact on others who are considering travel to West Africa to help Ebola victims.
If we quarantine people and treat them like criminals when they come back, telling them you must be confined to your house and have no contact with people, that is detrimental in multiple ways.
He says quarantines erode the sense of compassion for those who need it most.
If we treat the returning workers like criminals, how can we have compassion on the people they're going to help?
Brantley voiced his concerns at an Overseas Security Advisory Council briefing at the State Department, where he also described his own experience after contracting Ebola in Liberia. A colleague, Dr. Lance Plyer, said at one point, Brantley's situation appeared bleak.
I've been practicing medicine, internal medicine, for over 20 years, and I was very convinced that he had a couple hours to live. And I just looked at him, and I just couldn't believe it.
Brantley was flown to an Atlanta hospital in August, where he eventually recovered from Ebola. He urged compassion for the thousands of West Africans who are still battling the virus.
We have to go help them. They are in desperate need of the help from the international community.
He also said the United States needs a unified policy for dealing with volunteers who are returning home after helping those affected in West Africa. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
Christine Kaseba Sata said she will run for president of Zambia to replace her husband. Michael Sata died last month at the age of 77 in a London hospital following a long illness. Kaseba Sata is a medical doctor who specializes in gynecology and obstetrics. She will compete against two other family members, her son, Mulenga Sata, and a nephew, Miles Sampa, who have also declared running for the presidency. With a virus threatening the crops of up to 70% of Kenya's maize farmers, a number of lawmakers are calling for the country's controversial ban on genetically modified organisms to be lifted for the sake of food security. Hilary Hewler has more from Nairobi.
If there's one thing you're almost guaranteed to find in a Kenyan kitchen, it's corn, known locally as maize. Corn is roasted by the side of the road, boiled with beans, or ground into a flour to make ugali, a Kenyan staple. Agricultural researcher Simon Gichuki explains that for many Kenyans, maize is an irreplaceable part of their diet.
They eat maize almost every day. There are people who eat it lunch, they also eat it for dinner and at breakfast. So when there is no maize in Kenya, we usually say there is famine. Even when the other crops are doing well, like bananas, cassava, sweet potatoes, we say there's famine.
This is why the past several years have been so alarming for Kenyans. The country's cereal-growing heartlands have been ravaged by a virus called maize lethal necrosis disease. The Cereal Growers Association has said the disease could cut production this year by almost a third, with up to 70% of maize farmers affected. According to Kipkorir Menjo, head of the Kenya Farmers Association, the virus could be a threat to food security. In Kenya, more and more policymakers are starting to think that the solution to diseases like this is genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. GMOs have been banned in Kenya since 2012, when a study found that GMO maize caused cancer in rats. The study was later discredited and pulled from the scientific journal that had published it. But in Kenya, GMOs are still illegal. Gichuki, who runs the biotechnology unit at the Kenya Agricultural and Livestock Research Organization, says Kenyan scientists are already talking to foreign universities to start work on a lethal necrosis disease-resistant maize. Several other types of GMO maize have been harvested already, including one crop in October. Menjo says that among farmers themselves, opinions on GMOs are mixed. But a number of lawmakers have been speaking out in favor of lifting the ban.
The pressure is from the MPs because they know the benefits and why these kind of GMOs are necessary as far as food security is concerned, because every now and then we have been having challenges of having enough food to feed the nation.
GMOs are still controversial in Kenya, and although Menjo supports legalizing them, he says many people are concerned about their potential side effects.
You find that the unintended results is what most people fear, because who is controlling to ensure that we have the positive results coming in and not the negative side of it? That is basically what makes people to be a bit skeptical.
But Gichuki is convinced it won't be long before he and his team of scientists will be able to distribute their newly created GMO seeds to farmers.
The government is very serious with food security, so I don't see any reason why this ban is going to be there for long. It will definitely be lifted. And we in research are not just waiting, we are moving on, preparing, because we are confident that it will be lifted.
Kenya's GMO ban can only be lifted by the cabinet, which has yet to make a decision. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
If you hunt, handle, or eat bushmeat, you must take caution. I'm Dr. Conde Greaves. Certain animals, such as bats, monkeys, chimpanzees, and gorillas, carry the Ebola virus. Ebola is not the white man's disease. It was not brought here by humanitarian workers. The virus was first discovered in 1976 and named after the Ebola River in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Researchers believe fruit bats may be the natural carrier of the virus. It is believed the virus was passed to humans through handling and eating bush meat. Bush hunters face real dangers. A simple scratch, cut, or bite from a sick animal could pass the virus onto you. Preparing meat from a sick animal could also infect you. As long as Ebola is present, you must stay away from bush animals. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Chaos erupted at Nigeria's National Assembly today as security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from entering the complex. A United Nations commission is looking into allegations of widespread and systematic violations by Eritrean authorities against the country's citizens. And WHO says Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea have improved their record of safe and dignified burial of those who die of the viral disease. Coming up, music from Ghana. And in our feature segment, cell phone applications that can improve the responses of epidemics and natural disasters. I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sonny Young. Hello, Sonny.
Hello, Yehias.
Sonny, I understand you're kicking off with African football.
Yehias, let's kick off once again with African football. The field is now set for the 16-team Africa Cup of Nations finals to be hosted by Equatorial Guinea beginning January 17th. Ghana, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Mali, and the two Congos, Congo Brazzaville and the Democratic Republic of Congo, earned the final six places on Wednesday. Nine former champions qualified for Equatorial Guinea 2015. Of those nine, Ghana and Cameroon have the proudest Nations Cup pedigrees. The Black Stars of Ghana and the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon have each won four Nations Cup titles. Cameroon topped Group D in African Nations Cup qualifying with 14 points from six matches, and Ghana topped Group E with 11 points from six games. The Desert Foxes of Algeria, the 1990 Nations Cup champion, tallied the most points in Nations Cup qualifying with 15 points from six matches. Our VOA football fans will remember the Algerians made history at this year's World Cup in Brazil by reaching the round of 16 at football's premier event for the first time in their history. The Super Eagles of Nigeria also advanced to the World Cup's round of 16 this year. But as we hear now from our Daybreak Africa sportsman Marco Uma, the Super Eagles will not get a chance to defend their African championship in Equatorial Guinea.
The 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations will culminate in crowning a new African champion. Despite fighting hard from a 2-0 deficit to hold their South African visitors to a 2-2 draw in Uyo, Akwa Ibom State, Nigeria on Wednesday, African champions and Nigeria Super Eagles did not muster enough points to progress to the main contest in Equatorial Guinea next January. Instead, the Republic of Congo, who pipped Sudan 1-0, along with South Africa, qualified from Group A. Elsewhere in Group B, Mali upstate Algeria 2-0 as Ethiopia and Malawi drew 0-0. Gabon beat Lesotho 4-2 as Burkina Faso and Angola drew 1-1 in Group C. Ivory Coast and Cameroon drew 0-0 as the Democratic Republic of Congo slammed Sierra Leone 3-1 in Group D. Guinea beat Uganda 2-0 as Ghana dismissed Togo 3-1 in Group E. Zambia pipped Cape Verde Islands 1-0 as Niger and Mozambique drew 1-1 in Group F action. In Group G, Senegal blanked Botswana 3-0 and Tunisia edged Egypt 2-1. Consequently, the 15 teams joining hosts Equatorial Guinea for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations draws in Malabo on the 3rd of September are Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cape Verde Islands, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Republic of Congo, Gabon, Ghana, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Mali, Senegal, South Africa, Tunisia, and Zambia.
this is Africa. This time for Africa.
I'm very excited. Because
this is Africa. This time for Africa.
The Sunny Side of Sports welcomes your comments. You can send me email at sunny@voanews.com. Sunny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237.
I'm Shegun Adeyemi, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is. And every Sunday, I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports from the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game on.
Game on, VOA sports fans. As you might expect, Nigerian football fans are despondent over their beloved national team, the Super Eagles, not qualifying for the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Let's listen in now to these fans in Nigeria's political capital, Abuja.
In fact, I'm very sad because of the outcome of the result of the game. In fact, the coach disappointed us, not the players. If had it been Keshi is a good coach, he's losing two goals, he would have made a substitution. It's a big embarrassment to the whole nation because Nigeria is a giant of Africa, even in football and resources and everything. But we failed to qualify. It's a disappointment.
It's quite unfortunate that Nigeria didn't go through. It's so disappointing. You know, but that's football. We just have to take heart and move on.
Take heart and move on, Nigeria football fans. Let's move on now to boxing. And it's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moweta. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sunny. I would say welcome back from Niger.
Yeah, great trip to Nigeria, Nnamdi.
Man, you were lounging, bro.
Yeah, great trip.
I'm Manny Pacquiao, the fighter from the Philippines.
Well, Nnamdi, the Pac-Man back in the ring this weekend. He puts his WBO welterweight title on the line Saturday night here in the USA, and it'll be Sunday in China. He fights undefeated American Chris Algieri in Macau. Both fighters, Nnamdi, seem pretty pleased with their training camps. First, let's hear the Pac-Man, and then we'll hear Algieri.
I'm so happy to be back here in Venetian Macau for another fight like this. I believe that it's going to be an exciting fight on Sunday. It's all set. We did our best in training. My team, they're very happy for this training camp. I'm happy because we remember and we see the back those old days when I was young, and the speed and the power and the determination and aggressiveness is there back. So I'm very excited for Sunday for this fight. And I know my opponent is training hard for this fight and excited to win the fight, but I won't let that happen.
I'm excited to be back in China. You know, I had a great experience on the press tour, and now we're here to do work. The talking is done, the hard work is done, the training is done. I'm not going to say too much, but I prepared very well. I'm excited for this weekend. It's going to be a great show. Make sure you guys either come or tune in. You don't want to miss this.
What do you think about Pac-Man Algeri Namdi?
Sonny, I've always said when the fight was made, it's a bad fight for Manny Pacquiao. Bad fight in the sense is fighting a guy who's 3.5 inches taller than him, 5-inch reach advantage, and he's out there looking for a knockout. And when a trainer and a fighter is out there looking for a knockout, you know what will happen, you know. So it's a very bad fight for Manny Pacquiao, and his focus is on Floyd Mayweather, not on Chris Algieri. So some interesting thing could happen in Macau Sunday morning, you know.
Namdi, do you really give Algieri much of a shot? He doesn't seem to have the experience of Pac-Man.
Sonny, every boxing purist, every boxing aficionado believe that Manny Pacquiao is going to have an easy fight. I see an upset. I see Chris Algieri winning by decision. And I think he's capable of that because he's a good boxer. He's got a good jab. And this is a guy who has a master's degree, going for his PhD. So you expect a good boxing IQ from this cat, Sonny.
Well, what's your sense, Namdi? Is there much buzz among the boxing aficionados for this fight?
Zero buzz, Sonny. This fight is not happening at the MGM Grand Casino. This fight is happening in Macau Sunday morning. It's really no buzz for this fight, you know. And it's a pay-per-view. That means you got to plug down $70 to sit in front of your TV and watch it, whereas you can just go on internet and follow the fight, you know. So don't expect them to come out and say 500,000 people bought this fight or 800,000. The numbers are going to be really bad. Fight fans are not really up for this fight.
What about Floyd Mayweather, Namdi? Does Pac-Man have to win this fight to set up the possibility of fighting Mayweather?
Well, that's the more reason why I like to see him win this fight, so that he'll be a possibility of that the fight we've all been waiting for with Floyd Mayweather. But there is what we call a rematch clause. If there's a big upset in Macau, there'll be a rematch against Chris Algieri, and then the winner will then we can start talking about Mayweather. But I still believe that Manny Pacquiao's focus on this fight is not on Algieri. It's all about Floyd Mayweather and Mayweather. I want Mayweather. So, and said, I'm going to blow this guy out in round one. I just don't see him winning this fight, Sonny.
Namdi going with Chris Algieri to upset the Pac-Man in Macau. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta. This VOA programming note, my special guest on my 30-minute show on Friday at 1730 UTC will be Ghana and D.C. United defender Samuel Nkum. Samuel was named to Ghana's World Cup team this year. Once again, Ghana and D.C. United defender Samuel Nkum, my special guest on my 30-minute show on Friday at 1730 UTC. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahayas Wuhee.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, cell phone applications that can improve the response to epidemics and natural disasters. And next, in Uganda, recycling empty bottles has become a livelihood. But first, some music. Here is Kobe Maxwell of Ghana with Auraba.
Session I know take a Jin and Jay Atty. So
Bobby Maxwell of Ghana with Awuraba. When it comes to fighting viral outbreaks and preventing water shortages, healthcare applications are poised to offer the public real-time analytics, data centers, and messaging platforms. These cell phone applications can improve the response to epidemics and natural disasters. Elizabeth Polot has more from Uganda's capital of Kampala.
The first line of defense against deadly viral outbreaks, water shortages, and food scarcity might just end up on your phone. A new application called mHero, created in Uganda, combines health worker registries, patient data, real-time monitoring, and open messaging systems to ensure a fast and integrated response. mHero stands for Mobile Health Worker Electronic Response and Outreach. It uses a revolutionary messaging platform called RapidPro that employs trigger words to contact specialized workers if a disease like Ebola is discovered. It also allows users to track whom they've reached and create real-time analytics based on their responses. A few weeks ago, Uganda experienced an outbreak of Marburg, a viral hemorrhagic fever similar to Ebola. Sean Bashke, a health systems specialist with UNICEF, explains how Uganda has excelled in providing quick containment.
You can see with the case of Marburg here a couple of weeks ago how quickly the country mobilized suspected cases were followed up in hours, and it didn't move beyond a single index patient. I think Uganda really does, you know, show and provide a model for the rest of the world on how you could build a national sustainable health systems architecture. We're very excited because this was these tools that are now being scaled up in West Africa originated in Uganda, were built by Ugandans. These solutions came from Africa and are being used in Africa.
The Ugandan Ministry of Health says that in the next 3 months, MHERO systems will be deployed around Uganda. MHERO has a wide application since it can broach language and literacy divides by using picture-based references. Nimrod Wandera, a software developer, explains how those with zero experience using smartphones and applications were trained in MHERO.
So we thought about an app as a box, okay? So we made a box. We made a box out of hard paper. And that box was covered, and on top of it was the name of the app. So you have a box, and then you tell someone, okay, when I give you the phone, yeah, I'm giving you a box. And that box has things in it. What we call features were small boxes inside that box. And they find mother reminders, they find household survey. And when you give them back the phone, life was much simpler. They could click through, they could understand that nut and go out of this box and go back into the bigger box. This is real stuff.
To access these databases, registered healthcare workers, NGOs, and clinics must fill out an application from the Ministry of Health, and approval comes shortly after. There are also stopgaps in place to ensure that patient medical records are kept confidential. Officials are hoping that MHERO and apps like it bring a new level of crisis management throughout the African continent. Lisbeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Millions of used plastic bottles are choking the world environment, but in Uganda, recycling those empty bottles have become a livelihood for hundreds of poor people. Zlatida Hoke reports on how an African has turned a menace into an advantage.
The water drainage system in Uganda's capital, Kampala, is providing a livelihood for hundreds of people who collect carelessly thrown away trash. David Kibanda manages about 10 workers who collect up to 10 tons of plastic waste a week and sell it for about 7 U.S. cents per kilogram. Kibanda says the people he supervises would otherwise be jobless. Now they make a living while helping to clean up the city.
Go to other places where they don't pick these things. Go to the drainage system they have blocked.
More than half of the trash in Uganda's capital is left uncollected by understaffed and underfunded municipal services. Much of it ends up in drainage channels, natural watercourses, streets, and undeveloped plots. Environment authorities say that about 600 tons of plastic are discarded in Kampala every day. Private companies such as the Plastic Recycling Institute, run by a South African beverage company, have stepped in to help reduce the waste by employing people to collect plastic waste for recycling. The Kampala plant recycles 650 kilograms of plastic per hour and more than 3 million kilograms annually, which means that much less ends up in Uganda's environment.
I would say it is working. If at all there were no recycling plants, that means all the plastics we are collecting right now would be in the rivers and streets.
The plastics are sorted, washed, and processed for the manufacturing of other plastic products, including floor tiles and roof slates. Environmentalists often point out that conserving nature and its resources need not be expensive. Mostly, it just takes initiative and persistence to develop good habits. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiyu Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Martin Kersius, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The 21 Pacific Rim economies that comprise the membership of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, forum are home to approximately 40% of the world's population and three-fifths of the global economy. And over the next 5 years, half of all economic growth outside of the United States will take place in APEC countries. In the 21st century, said President Barack Obama at a recent APEC CEO summit, one country's prosperity doesn't have to come at the expense of another. If we work together and act together, strengthening the economic ties between our nations will benefit all of our nations. That's true for the nations of APEC, and I believe it's particularly true for the relationship between the United States and China. The United States welcomes the rise of a prosperous, peaceful, and stable China. In fact, we help China integrate into the global economy. That's because even though we do compete for business, we believe China's participation in the rules-based international economic system enables us to work together on global challenges, promotes more open and market-driven bilateral and international trade and investment, and is ultimately good for our own economy. We hope to persuade China to take specific actions that will help expand trade and investment across the Asia-Pacific, including pursuing a high-standard and comprehensive bilateral investment treaty that embodies the principles of non-discrimination, fairness, openness, and transparency. Said President Obama,
"We look to China to create a more level playing field on which foreign companies are treated fairly so that they can compete fairly with Chinese companies. A playing field where competition policy promotes the welfare of consumers and doesn't benefit just one set of companies over another. We look to China to become an innovative economy that values the protection of intellectual property rights and rejects cyber theft of trade secrets for commercial gain. We look to China to approve biotechnology advances that are critical to feeding a growing planet on the same timeline as other countries. To move definitively towards a more market-determined exchange rate. And yes, to stand up for human rights and freedom of the press."
Such actions would be good for the United States, good for sustainable growth in China, and good for the stability of the Asia-Pacific region. "We are the two largest economies in the world," said President Obama. "If China and the United States can work together, the world benefits."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.